Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Sunday morning shiur. The topic of this week's shiur is a topic which is relevant to very, very much in everyday life. It has to do with the inyan of ribbis, charging interest, which comes up in a lot of situations, and a lot of the situations are cases that we don't necessarily view as ribbis. So therefore I felt that being that it was mentioned in yesterday's parsha, it's mentioned in several places in the Torah, but yesterday in particular, we had in Parshas Bahar, which discusses the laws of commerce, the laws of business, and in the Torah, the primary place where that's discussed is in Parshas Bahar. So I thought it would be appropriate to take a few moments to look into some of the prohibition of charging interest and how it applies. Before I begin, I would like to say that a lot of the information this year came from the very excellent sefer written by Rabbi Yisrael Reisman, which is called The Laws of Ribbis, which is very worthwhile for any businessman to purchase that sefer, because there are so many situations, and he really researched it very, very well and wrote it very clearly, and it's really a very, very worthwhile thing to have. It's not possible in one shiur to cover all the aspects of ribbis. If one looks in the Shulchan Aruch, you'll see that there are many simonim on this topic, and the truth of the matter is that it's very complex. But what I would like to try to do is to point out certain situations which arise, which we don't necessarily view as ribbis. So we'll begin here with the pasuk that we have in yesterday's parashas on the sheet, the very first source. The Torah tells us in Perikot, Hey Pasuk Lamed Zayin, the Torah says, Es kaspecho lo siten lo b'neshech, that you should not give your money to another Jew with neshech. Now the word neshech is loosely translated as interest, usury. We'll see in a minute why the word neshech was used. The shoresh of the word neshech is the word noshech, to bite. Okay, so we'll soon see about that. But here in this pasuk, the reference is that you should not lend your money with interest. Uvemarbis lo siten achlecha, and with marbis, with charging additional funds, that's the source of the word ribbis. If you look here at the word that the Torah uses, marbis, so the last four letters of the word ribbis. The word ribbis, marbis, means additional. But you're charging additional funds. You're lending money and charging additional funds. Well, siten achlecha, you should not even give your food. So the Torah here is telling us that the two isurim that pertain to the isur of charging ribbis. Now, what will become clear in this shiur is the fact that the prohibition of ribbis is very, very strong. And the Torah went to tremendous lengths to prohibit ribbis, even in cases where a lot of people would be shocked. A lot of people would say, what's wrong with that? What's the big deal? But the reason why this is mentioned in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and I regret that I discovered this late last night after the sheets were printed up. But the Kitzur, I'll just read it to you. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says, in the beginning of his discussion of ribbis, he says, because a person by nature is very much desiring of money. And when it comes to all the prohibitions of money dealings, the one that is the most likely for a person to violate is the Isser of Ribbis. The one that a person is the most likely to violate, meaning even more so than stealing. Why is that? So he says, "Ki begezel v'ono kedoma," because when it comes to stealing or when it comes to fraud, harezem mashkiach al atzmo. So a person knows that it's wrong. Shelo yehi nigzav lo yisan. A person has a conscience. He knows it's wrong. I can't steal. I can't do this. I can't defraud somebody. However, when it comes to ribbis, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says it's very easy to rationalize. Why is that? Because the person who is lending the money says to him that, says to himself, he rationalizes to himself, I'm doing him a tremendous favor. This person needs money. So, okay, so let me charge him for it. You know, after all, in halacha, you're allowed to charge rent for everything. You're allowed to charge rent for your house, you're allowed to charge rent for your car, you're allowed to charge rent for any item that a person may have. Ribbis, interest, is the rent for money. Right? In other words, that's what you say. I'll give you the money and you pay rent for it. You'll give me a fee for that. So the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that it, therefore it's very easy for a person to rationalize that, listen, he needs the money. And, okay, listen, I'll give it to him and he's gonna still be thrilled. He'll be happy to pay even at a high rate of interest, any rate of interest like we see today, people in the credit card industry, they charge ridiculous rates of interest, and yet, day after day, thousands and thousands of people sign up for it because they need the money. So they need the money, so I'll do anything, whatever I could do. So it's very easy for a person who lends the money to rationalize that. And furthermore, says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it's also easy for him to rationalize on the other end of it that I'm losing money by lending it to him. Because had I not loaned it to him, I could have invested it. I could have had it at the very least, I could have had it sitting in the bank earning interest, or I could have put it into an investment. So I'm losing, he's gaining, why can't I charge for it? So therefore, this is the psychology, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch tells us, this is the psychology that runs through the mind of a person. It's natural for a person to think in these terms. And it's for this reason that the Torah went to untold lengths, to incredible lengths, to prohibit this. The Torah went to, with it, that you can't do anything of the sort because it's so easy to rationalize. When it comes to stealing, we have Yisurim pertaining to stealing, we have Yisurim pertaining to fraud. You had in the parasha yesterday about Onah, but the fact of the matter is that there, at least in a person's conscience, a good person will say, how could I do such a thing? So even though sometimes somebody succumbs and does it anyway, but we know it's wrong, so there's a natural resistance. But when it comes to this, to the contrary, very easy to rationalize doing it. So he says, therefore the Torah is very, very strict with this prohibition. Okay? There are many, many lavin. There are many lavin that pertain to this. Okay? And many surim in the Torah, and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch proceeds to say, Hamalva over b'shisha lavin, that the person who lends the money with interest violates six negative prohibitions in the Torah. And then he says, "V'lo yokum b'tchias hamesim," that a person who lends money with interest to another Jew will not come back in the tchias hamesim. Okay, that this Shenemar, he quotes a pasuk to this effect. The famous story, just as an aside, a well-known story, that there was a fellow in Europe 200 years ago that he was a member of the Jewish community, but he would constantly lend money to people with interest, and he didn't care, and they told him it's not right what he's doing, and he didn't care. And he was a wealthy fellow, and he wouldn't listen to anybody, and he went through his whole adult life doing this. So finally he passed away, so when it came time to bury him, so the Chevra Kadisha figured that now's the time to get back. You know, now's the time to take vengeance against this person. So they said to the family, we will bury him, but they said it's going to cost you, they quoted an exorbitant price. So the children were very upset. They said, what kind of thing is that? That's not what you charge everybody else. So they went to the Rav of the city, who was the well-known Rabbi Akiva Eger, and they went to him with their complaint. So he thought about it, and he said, the truth of the matter is, it makes a lot of sense what they're doing. They said, what do you mean, why? He said, because ordinarily, a grave is just a temporary thing, because there'll be one day Tchias HaMesim, so the person will go out of the grave. But this guy is not going to get up at Tchias HaMesim, so this is a long-term purchase, so therefore, you have the right to charge as much as you want, because this is a deal that's going to hold for many, many years. So even though it's a very strong story, but the point of the matter is, this is how far it goes, because the fact of the matter is that the Torah views it, it's natural in the course of life that people need money. And it happens, and it's all min ha-shamayim. You know, Hashem has a plan for every person, and some people are blessed with ashiras, and other people have to struggle, and everyone has their own challenges in life. But when it comes to this, so the Torah feels very strongly that, how could you do that to a person? He needs the money. How could you not lend it to him? Are you going to charge him for that? This is where he needs to live. He can't function. What's he going to do? He has to pay his bills. He has to buy food for his family. What's he supposed to do? So he's desperate, so he'll agree to anything. But at that time, you can't charge the person for any payment in excess. And if we look at the Rambam here, the Rambam says in the fourth parak, Hilchos Malchus Pilova, so the Rambam says, he quotes the pasuk that we had in the parsha yesterday, Neshech Besarbis Echad Hu. He says, really, this pasuk that we read, Neshech and Marbis, it's the same thing. As it says in the pasuk, Shenemar, as Kaspachal Ositun of a Neshech, Marbis Ositun Achlecha, excuse me, and later on, Olahanu Omer, in Sefer Devarim, it says, Neshech Kesef, Neshech Ochel, etc. So says the Rambam, V'loma Nikra Shmo Neshech, why is charging interest called Neshech? He says, Mipnei Shehu Kinoshech, because it's like you're taking a bite out of the person. Shemitzar chavero v'ochol besoro, because you're causing him pain and you are eating his flesh. So therefore it's called neshech. Okay? The word marbis, as we said originally, is the appropriate word, but the Torah calls it neshech to sort of drive home the point. This is what you're doing. You're causing the person so much pain. If you turn over the page, the Shulchan Aruch takes it a drop further, and the Shulchan Aruch says in Sif Aleph, Tzarech li zor beribis v'kam alav nemru bo. There are many prohibitions that were said when it comes to ribis. Vafilu halova hanosno v'ha'orev v'ha'edim overim. The prohibition of interest. Here's the first chiddush, right? The prohibition of ribis does not only apply to the person who lends the money. It also applies to the person who borrows the money. It also applies to the edim, to the witnesses who witness the deal. They are also guilty. The sofer who writes up the contract has violated the law. The co-signer, the oref, the guarantor of the loan, has also violated the law. Anybody who participates in such an activity in any way is considered violating the law of ribis. Now, I just feel that, you know, you listen to this and you say to yourself, but come on, this is the way the business world works and people borrow money all the time. But the fact is we see that when people desperately need money, they'll do anything in the short term to get past their short term problems, even though it puts them in tremendous jeopardy in the long term, puts themselves in very precarious situations. And I think it stands to reason that the reason why the Torah goes so far, even on the most minute form of ribis, is because of the fact, even you'll say, well, I'll charge him a fair rate of interest. All right. I understand. You want to tell me it's neshech, you're taking a bite out of the person. Sure, that's if you charge 20, 30, 40% interest. But I'll charge him a small rate of interest. What's wrong with that? So I assume that the reason is because it's contagious. You know, once you start doing such a thing, so one thing leads to the next. So you say to yourself, once you start rationalizing, there's no end to it. So you say, well, all right, I'll charge you this percent. Oh, come to think of it, it's still below the market rate. I'll go a little bit higher, and then higher, and then higher. And we see what goes on in the world today. So therefore, the Torah was very, very strict when it comes to the laws of ribis. Okay, so now, what constitutes ribis? What constitutes charging interest? So we have to know that there are two basic forms of ribis. The ribis, the charging of interest that is prohibited midoraisa, is what's called ribis kitsutza. Ribis kitsutza means prearranged ribis, meaning that at the time that the loan was extended, it was determined that you're going to pay, I'm lending you X amount of money, and you're going to pay me back this principal plus interest. If that is stipulated at the time of the loan, then that is considered ribis kitsutza, and it's also held lahalacha that not only at the time the loan is made, but if a loan has already been made but has then been extended, so then the extension of a loan is also considered in a certain sense the beginning of a new loan, and therefore this is already a dispute in the Rishonim. Those who aren't in Kiddushin are familiar with this question, but the fact of the matter is that the extension of a loan is also held lahalacha to be considered ribis kitsutza. It's considered to be also a prearranged ribis because now you're extending it, and that is usur midoraisa. Midrabbanan, the rabbis came along and said that even ribis that is paid at other times is prohibited. So therefore, if you give someone a gift in advance to secure a loan, you want someone to lend you money, so you send them over a nice present to his house, So you'll say, well, that's not ribis kitzutza. That was not built into the deal. It's not even money. I'm giving him goods. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The law of ribis doesn't matter whether you're paying in cash or whether you're paying in goods or whether you're paying in services, or we'll soon see whether even if you're paying in words, all of these apply to the law of ribis. And therefore, the halacha would be that you could not give someone a gift in advance, nor could you give someone a gift subsequent to the loan. If you want to say, the person lent you a lot of money and you appreciate it, so you want to send them a nice present, right? We'll soon see about even when it comes to mitzvahs, but let's say you want to send him a nice present, comes Hanukkah, so you'll send him a nice gift to his house. He did you such a big favor, he lent you money. That is prohibited, midrabanan, that is considered a form of ribis. It's usur to send it, and it's usur for him to accept it. If such a gift arrives at his house, he must send it back. He has to tell tell whoever sent it, take it back. I'm not allowed to accept it because of the fact that a gift given at any time, this is called ribis mucheres, ribis that's paid at a later time. Also, we mentioned before ribis mukdemes, ribis that's paid in advance. All of these things were prohibited by the Rabban. Okay, so now, let's go through a few common situations of ribis. And the first one is the one which is probably the one that people find the most surprising, because it does not actually involve the payment in the form of money or goods, but that is called ribis dvarim. Ribis dvarim means ribis that has to do with words. And the source for this is, if you turn back to the sheet on side one, the Gemara Bava Metzia and Daf Ayin Hey tells us, Tanya, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai Omer, a week after Lag Bomer, here we have it, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, said, Minayin l'nosha b'chavero mona. How do we know that if somebody borrowed money from his friend, the eino rogil lahaktel el shalom, and I don't usually greet this person, I don't have much to do with this person, and now he lent me money, and now I see him, and I want to go greet him. So how do we know, says Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, she'osur lahaktim lo shalom? How do we know that it is prohibited in such a case to greet him? Talmud Lomar, it says in the pasuk in Sefer Devarim, Neshech kol dovar asher yishach. Neshech kol dovar asher yishach, which literally means that you're not allowed to pay interest in any form of interest. But the Chazal here made a drasha, they made a play on the words kol dovar, that the word kol dovar doesn't mean any item, but it means any speech. Kol dovar asher yishach afilu dibur osur. That even to greet the person, if you are not accustomed to greeting that person, you can't go out of your way to wish him good Shabbos. If you don't usually say good Shabbos to this person, because when you walk out of shul, he's not in your line of the line that you walk out of, you don't, but now he lent you money, so you're gonna go give him a big good Shabbos. You can't do that. You can't do that. Why? You'll say, what's wrong with that? So the Torah says, this is how far the Torah goes when it comes to the prohibition of ribis, afilu dibur asur, that even to say it in words is prohibited. And this is found in the Shulchan Aruch, if you turn over the sheets, if you're Aleph, that im lo haya ragil lahaktim lo shalom, asur lahaktim lo. If you were not accustomed to greeting him, you can't greet him. You cannot greet him. And now, the din should be understood is only true if you were not accustomed to greeting him. If you anyway used to greet him because your friend or whatever, so then you don't have to go against what you always did, because then clearly the reason why you're greeting him has nothing to do with the fact that he lent you money. You've been greeting him for years. So then you're allowed to continue. However, in a situation where the person, you didn't really cross paths with this person so much, but now that he did you this favor, you feel indebted to him, and you feel you have to go wish him a good Shabbos, you have to go say hello to him, you have to call him Friday to wish him a good Shabbos, you have to, wish him a good day, whatever it may be, a good Yontif, whatever, that you're not allowed to do. This is Neshech Dvorim, Kol Dover Asher Yishach. Similarly, you cannot praise a person for lending you the money in his presence. You can't say, you can't praise him. It's brought down a remarkable thing that even when it comes to publishing Svarim, so very often authors who publish Svarim, it's expensive, they have to borrow money. They get to try to get sponsors or whatever, but oftentimes they have to borrow money from somebody to publish the Sefer. if that happens, you're not allowed to print an acknowledgement in the Sefer thanking the person who lent you the money. You cannot do that because of the fact that that is considered ribbis dvarim, because you're going ahead and you're thanking him. You could put something. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said you could put something that's a little bit vague. You could say, I acknowledge the efforts of this person without getting specific. But to speak out, to write that the publishing of this sefer would not have been possible if not for the generous loan that was extended to me by this person is prohibited. You're not allowed to do that because that's ribbis dvarim, because you're going ahead, you wouldn't have praised him otherwise. He wouldn't have been there if not for this. So this is a situation of, this is how far the Torah goes with this issur. And again, you'll say, why should that be? Isn't this outrageous? This is, in the business world, this is totally unheard of. The business world operates in the 180 degree opposite dimension of this. But the reality is that the Torah did not want the neshech. The Torah doesn't want a person to be bitten. As we said at the outset, it's very easy for this to be justified. It's very easy for this to be rationalized. And once you start justifying it, there's no telling how far it will go. There's no telling how far it will go. As we see what goes on in the outside world. So therefore, in these situations, the Torah was makbid. The Torah was insistent that nothing whatsoever could be done. If you lend the person money, it's a chesed, it's a great chesed to do that, and that's all. And you can't, the borrower should not expect that things should be given, the lender should not expect that things should be given back to him, and the borrower should refrain from thanking him excessively. Yeah.
And how you say thank you to somebody to help, you know, yeshiva, have dinners, all that kind
of thing. Okay, so that's a good question. So now, good question. So now, we'll talk about thank you first. So what about saying thank you in such a situation? Can you say thank you? A simple question. A person lends you money, can you say thank you to him? So, a lot of people, there's a strict opinion that says that you can't even thank the person. He's doing a mitzvah. So, right now it doesn't resonate with us. It's totally against the culture and the way we think to take such a strict line. So many poskim permit it, but really the attitude should be when a person lends you money, if you're borrowing the money, you should thank the person not for the loan itself, but you should thank the person for the effort that he made to get the money. The effort, in other words, let's say you call a person, I need cash desperately, can you help me out? And the guy says, yeah, I'll run to ATM machine, I'll get you the money, and he comes and gives it to you, so you could thank him for that. In other words, he put himself out. It was an inconvenience, there was effort involved. That you could thank the person for. But to thank the person straight up for the loan is, even though logic would, you know, the Menschlichkeit would say, he did you such a big favor, how can you not thank him? But on the other hand, this is already getting into, you know, here's where it starts. Now you're indebted to him. Now you thank him. Now he's expecting other things and this and that. So again, when it comes down to it, you could say thank you straight up, according to many poskim. But everybody agrees that you could thank the correct way to do it is to thank the person for their effort and for their inconvenience. Okay, that's as far as that goes. But to just lavish praise upon a person for a loan is prohibited. But this is ribbis dvarim. It's learned from a pasuk. It's considered only an issur d'rabbanan, but nevertheless, it's considered usur. Okay, another common situation of ribbis that comes up very often, what people don't even think about is when you say to a person, "Keep the change." Okay, how does that happen? Somebody lends you, $25, and when it comes to pay, you don't have the exact change. You have 30. Now you got your hands on my head. Just take it. It's fine. Yeah, take the 30. I don't need the change back. It's fine. Or not only in a case of a loan, but let's say somebody laid out the money. In other words, this is a very common situation where somebody makes a purchase on your behalf and he laid out the money. Now today, it's very common that when you go to a store to purchase something, the purchase is that the price is in dollars and cents. Right? So he bought whatever it may have been, went to the store and bought it, and the final price was $162.29. Or $169.22. So when it comes time to pay, it's a simple thing. All right, he laid out the money, so you start counting out the money. Here's $170, but it was only $169 and change. You say, all right, it's fine, keep the change. Now, so what's wrong with that? So what's wrong with that is that when someone is purchasing something for you, according to most poskim, the second he buys it, it's yours. In other words, he bought it for you. This is the basis for this. There was a big shiloh that came up in Europe. This could happen, that Reuven sent Shimon to buy a lottery ticket for him. And he gave him the numbers, whatever it was, that however they did it, he bought the lottery ticket. And lo and behold, it was a winning ticket. So Shimon, who had purchased the ticket, said to himself, listen, it's not his yet. I didn't give it to him. I'll keep it for myself. Right? I bought the winning ticket. I bought it because he sent me. But I bought the winning ticket. So the psak was given that since he bought it with this fellow in mind, then it's considered that the ownership immediately goes to the person for whom it was purchased. So therefore, if you send someone to the store to buy a container of milk, the second he buys the milk, it's your milk. He's buying it as your shliach. So therefore, it's your milk. So if it's your milk and he put out the money, in effect, he loaned you the money because he bought you milk and he paid for it, but it's not viewed halakhically just that he paid for it. This is a loan. In other words, what's the money that he put out? So it's a loan. Obviously, it's a short-term loan. No big deal. Happens all the time, but a loan nonetheless. So now, can you say to him, keep the change? Well, what do you mean keep the change? That means you're paying back more than what he loaned you. He loaned you whatever the cost of the milk was, $3.45. You gave him $4 and said, keep the change. And that's it. So the question is that ribbis or not? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, for the trouble and for the gas.
So in these situations, we have to say as follows. I'm sorry?
I can't reimburse my mother now.
Oh, we'll see about that. Hold on. We'll see. I'm going to get to that. That's a very good point. I'm going to get to that. So now like this. So the basic halacha in this situation is as follows. There's a psak, the Minchas Yitzchak, one of the recent poskim of the previous generation, said that outright you could say keep the change on an insignificant amount of money. That because the point is that since it's so insignificant, you don't even view it as money. Now, what would that apply to? So he said that would apply to money that if it fell on the floor and scattered, you wouldn't make the effort to bend down to pick it up. In other words, if it fell straight on the floor, so anybody would just bend down and pick it up. It's right there. But if it fell on the floor and you know, coins and started rolling in all kinds of directions, so would you, or even a bill, you know, whatever, in that situation, if you would say, it's not worth it, forget it, then that's considered insignificant, and that would not be considered ribbis. But that, we all realize, doesn't apply to so many situations, right? That's only a very, very minimal amount of money. So if you're saying keep the change on a larger amount, if it's several dollars, very often you round up the price, right? Okay, just take it, it's fine. So this is a question that this might constitute ribbis. So as being said, there are several possible heterim for this. Okay, one heter for this would be in a situation where the person, you know, there was some sort of expense that the person had to get it for you. In other words, let's say the person had to drive to the store. So it cost a little, you know, they had to drive, it was gas in the car, whatever it may be, things like that. So then, if you say that, you could say, you have in mind that you could keep the rest of it as a payment for the effort, as a payment for the gas, as a payment for an expense that you might have had, that's fine. In other words, paying the expense of a loan is not ribbis. Ribbis is paying interest, paying rent for the money. But if there is an expense involved, in other words, if the person who loaned you the money had an expense in extending that loan to you, that to reimburse them for that is not a problem, because that's not interest. In other words, for example, a credit card transaction made in a store, so the merchant has to pay a certain percentage to Visa or to whoever, so they're losing money in a certain sense. A part of their sale, the money, their revenue is being paid off to a credit card company. But that's it. Now the truth of the matter is, when you buy something in a store and put it on a credit card, So what's really happening is that the credit card company is not immediately giving the money to the person who sold it to you. So in effect, it's also viewed as a loan because for the time being, the person has not been reimbursed by the Visa, hasn't sent them the check yet. It's going to take a while till he gets the money from Visa. So in the interim, but he's selling you, he's letting you take home the item, but you haven't paid him for it. You haven't paid him. What you've done is arranged for Visa to charge you, and then in turn, Visa's going to go ahead and send the money to him. So that's a loan. So then he says, well, I had to pay 2% or whatever it is to the credit card company. I'd like you to pay that. That's mutter, because that's an expense of the loan. That's not interest for the loan. That's something else. That's his expense. He's allowed to pass his expense on to you, but he's not allowed to charge you interest for that. So therefore, if you say to the person who you know, we went to the store, all right, listen, I know it wasn't easy. You had to go out and buy that for me. So keep the change in recognition of that. That's mutter. That is mutter. Okay, now, as far as parents, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Fine. This point, I thought I had learned that you're not permitted to reimburse somebody interest that they had to pay.
No, we're going to get to that. What a merchant pays Visa is not interest.
Right.
That's a choice we're going to get to. Okay. Now, another situation, so you said before, say you have to go give your mother back all the money for all the years that she, right, every child who runs an errand for the parent and sometimes the child even lays out the money and the parent gives them extra money and says, here, Tatala, have the money and have this extra money. So is that interest? So now, it should be pointed out that the Isser of Ribbis applies even to your best friend, first of all. Even to a family member. There's no, the negative impression that people have of interest is when it's cruel and ruthless and you're going to a person who you don't know. But the Torah's Isser of Ribbis applies even if it's to your best friend, even to a parent to a child to a parent. And people have to be wary of that there's an issue of ribbis there too. However, if it's clear that this is being given as a gift and not as a form of interest, if it's perfectly clear that it's being given for that on that basis, then it's mutter. So therefore, for a parent to say to a child, keep the change, that's because the parent, that's a gift to the child. That happens all the time. So this is just an opportunity that the parent has to give something to the child. That's not considered ribbis. And similarly, if it was perfectly clear, for whatever reason that this person would have given him this gift anyway, it had nothing to do, it has zero to do with the loan. And you're saying, here, well, I'm paying you back, and by the way, here's this. So that the Shach says would be different. However, in a lot of cases this doesn't apply. And very often it's just a matter of keep the change because, it's a pain in the neck to figure out how much the change is. I'm not interested, so keep the change. That in itself could potentially constitute ribbis, and that is something that the person has to recognize. So the heterim would be if it's in recognition of an effort, or if it's clear that it's a gift, if it's like a parent to a child.
Does it have to be an act of das?
What's that?
Does it have to be an act of das?
An act of, yeah. You have to have in mind. Or if it's a non-Sahadi, like if it's clear as the day, obvious, then a parent to a child, I don't know if you, it's understood that that's why they're doing it. It's understood, right, Rabbi?
What about a svara that I don't want to, in other words, I, the borrower, don't want to have to deal with the change.
So if the person, okay, so that's,
it's just because I don't want to have to come up with
the, I don't want to have to come up with the change. So I don't know if that alone is good enough. In other words, at the end of the day, he paid you more, even if that was your own, to just simply say, I'm Michael, right? That everyone said, I'm Michael, the difference. It's not so simple to do that because, here, take a rest. You don't have to give me back the change. Okay, but at the end of the day, you paid him interest. I don't know.
Isn't that a case of being obvious that I'm not?
Maybe. But it has to be as a gift. It's obvious that you're giving it as a gift. Okay, I don't know. So it's obvious that I'm not giving it as interest. Okay, could be.
It's not because I'm giving him 64 cents extra.
Right, I hear.
I don't deal with the change.
Okay, it could be. It could be. I don't know for sure. It could be. Yeah. Yeah.
How about a heter
iska? Heter iska is beyond this. Heter. I'll get to that at the end. Heter iska. Yeah. 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 Go ahead. Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's tricky. It's hard to know with these things. The best thing to do in a situation like this would be to say to the person, listen, it was a tircha for you. It was an inconvenience. You went to the store. It's not easy to do that. You made the effort while I was, you know, relaxing. You put yourself out. And therefore, in recognition of that, in recognition of the effort, you know, keep the change. That's something else.
You can't say but, thank you.
Right. Yeah, okay.
If I
yeah.
cannot make a bug,
yeah.
you're making it difficult for the community to help each other.
You're not making it difficult. If people follow the laws of Ribbis, it would be the easiest thing for people to help each other.
The restrictions are so tough.
The restrictions are so that requires a hashkafa. That requires a hashkafa. A person has to say, this is a mitzvah. This is a big mitzvah. To help somebody out is a big mitzvah. To keep the mitzvahs in the Torah, a person needs to have an outlook. Without an outlook, a lot of the mitzvahs in the Torah are very difficult. Shabbos is also brutally difficult. Well, I shouldn't work on Shabbos. 1/7 of my income is lost because I can't work on Shabbos. So the answer is there has to be a certain emunah. There has to be a certain, belief. That I'm doing the right thing, God will stand by me, and I'll be okay. Right. Now I agree that today the heter iska, which we'll get to at the very end, the heter iska is commonly used because of the great challenges. But and there's so many business opportunities, and like we said at the outset, like the kids of Shulchan Aruch said, that it's so easy to rationalize because a person can say, listen, you know what I could be doing with this money. You know what I could be doing with this money? Sometimes, just for the record, what happens if you ask a person for a loan and the person pulls it out of an interest-bearing account to lend it to you? So now he comes and says, I lost money. I would have, that money was sitting in an account that was paying interest. You can't pay for that either. That's not that, because you, in effect, you're paying him the interest that he lost. You can't do that. Right? So what do? So you say it makes it hard on people. So that's probably why they came up with the heter iska. That's why they came up with a heter for such a thing. But in the purest sense of the word, to lend the person in need money, you're giving the person life. The Rambam says that's the greatest form of charity, the greatest form of tzedakah. Right? It's embarrassing to go to a person and give them a handout. Right? The person who takes it feels terrible. But if you give the person a loan for which they could restructure their lives, in which they can get out of their difficulties, then so good, it'll take them time to pay it back. It's true. But on the other hand, look what you did for the person. Look what you did for that person. So it's an incredible mitzvah. It's a tchias ha-mesim in a certain sense. They could, I get the homiletic here, but, you know, it could be that the reason why such a person doesn't come back to tchias ha-mesim is because to give someone a loan is an act of tchias ha-mesim in a certain sense. You know, to say a little drush over here. In other words, because you're bringing the person out of his doldrums, you're bringing the person out of his despair, the person who walks around despondent, what am I going to do? I have no hope. So now you go ahead and you make it possible for that person, so you give him life. Yes, go ahead.
Some people ask for a loan from somebody, and they offer them collateral like a computer.
Yes. That's all right. That's all right. A collateral is fine. A collateral, a mashkon is fine. A person allowed to take that, that's fine. Yeah, and again, listen, I'm not saying that it also happens not uncommonly. You lend people money, they don't pay it back. So that happens too. So all right. We're not discussing here all the ins and outs of the practical realities of life. We're talking here from the perspective of the Torah, what should be and how it should be viewed, and what the expectation should be of a person who's extending a loan. Okay, now let's just try to move on here. Yeah,
use that collateral.
Can you use the collateral? There's a question in halacha whether you could use the collateral. In some cases you could use the collateral. It depends on the situation.
No, you could. Permission, but I'm saying ribbis.
No, but that's not ribbis. That's a guarantee that he's going to pay the loan. That's something else. That's a mashkan in halacha is viewed as something else, because at the end of the day you're going to give it back to him. Okay, now other common situations where this would come up is that you cannot do a favor for a person who lent you money if you would not have done that favor otherwise. So, for example, when it comes Purim, you send them shalach manos. Okay, he lent you money, gave you a nice loan, then sent him shalach manas. So the question is, did you send him shalach manas last year? If you sent him shalach manas even before he lent you the money, you can continue to do so. But if not, then you are, it's clear that you're doing this in recognition of the loan. So that you can't do. Even for a mitzvah. Even a mitzvah you can't do.
And say that's your intention.
Huh?
You intend to borrow money from the guy.
So that's also a question if you could do that. That's also, you're going to send him advance shalach manas. He'll say, what's this? You know, all of a sudden, I don't even know this guy. What, this beautiful shalach manas show up and the next day he calls you for a loan. Okay, so, even a mitzvah, another example would be to buy someone an aliyah in shul, right? This case is discussed in the poskim, where someone came into shul wanted to buy an aliyah for the person who lent him money, and it was ruled that it's usur to do so. You cannot do that. Because of the fact, unless you would have bought him the aliyah anyway. But if you would not have bought him the aliyah anyway, you can't buy that for him. If a person loaned money to someone who was making a wedding and he needed a loan, very expensive, and someone loaned him the money, he said, I'll give him a bracha under the chuppah. Right, I'll give him the honor of reciting one of the brachas, right, which is a nice thing, right? Well, what's wrong with that? That's you're not allowed to do that. Because if you would not have called him up otherwise, so then this is being done in return for the favor that he did you. This is all fall under the prohibition of ribbis. Similarly, to offer services to the person. Since you loaned me the money, I will learn with you b'chavrusa, or I will tutor your child, or I will do gardening in your house for free, or I will sell you items cheaper in my store. I will, you know, when you come into my store, I'll give you better prices than I give everybody else because you did me this favor. All of these things are not allowed. You can't do these things because of the fact that these all constitute in one form or another ribbis. Now, the exception to this is a very interesting halacha. If you look here in the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Zion, so the Shulchan Aruch says, Tzarech ha-malvel izor me-lahanos me-alov v'shalom mi-daito, kolz man sh'mosov bi-yado. Right? That the person who lends the money has to be very careful not to derive benefit from the lova. Afilu b'dover sh'hoya osalo, afim lo hilveyu. Okay? Aval, even if it would have been done otherwise. Aval imnenami menami daito, mutter bedavra shahaya osalo, afim lo hilveyu. The Shulchan Aruch basically says the following, that if, what about a situation where you would have done it for this person anyway? You would have done it for this person, and it just happens to be that now the person loaned you money. So here, the halacha makes a distinction between things done in private and things done in public. In other words, the type of thing that you would have done for him anyway, so you'll say, well, I'm not giving it to him, this benefit, I'm not giving it to him in recognition of the loan because I would have done it anyway. So the Shulchan Aruch says, but even so, it's only permitted to do that, to give him this benefit privately, but not publicly. The Shulchan Aruch says, but shelo yeh dar shel farhesya kagon lador b'chotz b'chatzero u'sham shbavodah. Let's say you let someone live in your house. You let someone live in your house, and you've already allowed him to live in your house. You're away, you live in a different city, you have a house in a certain place, and you need a loan. And this fellow lent you the money, and it happens to be that he's been, he needs a place to live, so you let him live in your house. So that for sure you could not do. But let's say he was living in your house previously, and now you just want to continue that arrangement, so it's clear that it has nothing to do with the loan. But since it's a davasha fahersia, since it is something that is in the public view, so people may not understand this, and people may say that this in some way is connected to the loan, and therefore the Rabbanim prohibited this. And this presents a very fascinating shaila. If a Kohen lends money to a Yisrael, and now the Yisrael needs to make a pidyon haben, he needs to make a pidyon haben, can he give the pidyon haben to this Kohen? So you'll say, well, what does one thing have to do with the other? I mean, this is a mitzvah. See, but we've learned already that even for a mitzvah, you can't give the person a benefit. So you'll say, but I would have given it to him anyway. Well, the person is my good friend. The person is my relative. He's my cousin. So you know, I'm not a Kohen, but you know, whatever. He's my cousin. He is a Kohen. So I would have used him anyway. But since a pidyon haben is a public affair, it's generally done in public. It's supposed to be done in front of many people. So therefore, that is considered a davar shel farhesya. There's a big shaila that if a Kohen lent money to Yisrael, whether the Yisrael could then turn around and use the coin for a pidyon haben for his child, so long as the loan is outstanding. So if he wants to pay up the loan in advance, then that's fine. He could pay up the loan and then use a pidyon haben. That's no problem. But if he want, but if this is going on, if this is going on, and he the loan is still out there, and now it comes to pidyon haben, this is a shaila, because it's brought down. They have a very hard time being mat to this. So it could be, you know, if this would come up, a person should ask a rav. But this is not to say that, you know, a kohen shouldn't lend people money. But if you get into a situation like that with a pidyon haben, so you have to just keep that in mind, that if the person is going to come to you for a pidyon haben and he still owes you money, that this may be considered a form of ribbis. Yeah, go ahead.
I guess two things. I don't know if they're related or not. Is there any time frame to any of this? In other words, it's going to come out now that if a guy lends money to people,
right,
it just takes a matter of time before he becomes a pariah to society because, well, I can't, you know.
Yeah, so once the loan, generally speaking, once the loan is paid off, it's over. Once the loan, all of this is speaking when the loan is outstanding. When the loan is outstanding, if the loan has been paid off, so then there's still a din that you can't pay it right away, because then it's considered ribbis mucheris, and you paid it, you know, it's considered like, you know, a day later you go give him extra money, you can't do that. But after, if this is a complicated thing in the halacha, once a certain amount of time has passed, it's unclear exactly, but once a certain amount of time has passed, that then you can give the person a regular, as if nothing ever happened before. No, this would apply to this also. If the loan is still outstanding.
Somebody lends money to Yeshiva.
Yes,
one of us lends money to Yeshiva.
Right.
And his son is in the school.
Right, so Yeshiva, just for the record, it's beyond the scope of this year, but it happens to be that there are many poskim that hold that the laws of ribbis don't apply to corporations, that the laws of ribbis only apply to individuals. And most yeshivas and most institutions, shuls, are nowadays incorporated. And therefore, there's a lot more flexibility. In other words, the question you had before about the dinner and all this, so how do they do that? The guy, you know, bailed out the shul with a big loan, or he bailed out the yeshiva with a big loan, and now you make him the guest of honor. How could you do that? So that's one of the terim that comes up. That's one of the terim that's incorporated. It would be different. I'm just going to try to finish with it's getting late. Okay, the next case, which was mentioned earlier, and again, this is just an overview. I'm not trying to possibly cover all the aspects of this. There's many, many, many aspects, and then you get into real business dealings, and it gets that much more complicated. But just everyday type of ribbis. Okay, a very common situation is to buy something on someone else's credit card. Okay, if you buy something on someone else's credit card and you reimburse the person within the 30-day period, there's no problem, because the person, or as if Reuven has a credit card, and Shimon says, let me buy something and charge it on your card. I don't have a credit card. Let me charge it to your card. So if you pay within the grace period, so there's no problem. So nobody was charged any interest. But what happens if you can't pay it within that time? So, you know, he said, listen, so Shimon, the person who made the purchase, says to Reuven, I'll pay the interest. So you say, well, what would be wrong with that? He's paying the interest to Visa, right? He's paying the interest to MasterCard. So what's the problem? What's the big deal? I'm not paying it to this Jew, I'm paying it to a guy. By guy, there's no din of ribbis. So the answer is, you're not really paying it to the credit card company, because the person whose name is on the card is the one who owes the company the money. In other words, the Visa has entered into a relationship with Reuven. So Visa is sending the bill to Reuven. So Reuven is paying interest to Visa. Visa doesn't know who Shimon is, nor do they care, right? If Reuven says, well, I gave my card to somebody and he made a purchase, well, so what? It was your card, so you owe us the money. So therefore, it comes out that Reuven is the one who owes the money, and now when Shimon is paying the interest that Reuven had to pay Visa, in effect, he's paying interest to Reuven for the loan that Reuven gave him. Because in other words, if let's say it was a $100 purchase, so it was purchased on a Visa card. So Reuven owes $100. Shimon made the purchase, but Reuven now owes $100 to Visa. Now it's not paid before the 30 days, so now let's say $10 charge, $10 interest comes on to it. So now it's $110. Now who owes that money? Reuven owes that money. In a court, Reuven would be, in a civil court, Reuven would be liable because it was his card. So now, in effect then, it comes out that by Reuven allowing Shimon to use his card, Reuven extended a loan to Shimon. And now, Shimon is saying, I will pay the money that you had to pay to Visa. That means that I'm going to give you interest to cover the interest that you had to pay them. So in effect, he is paying interest to the person whose credit card he used. Right? Because the interest that that person paid was, he's not, if he paid it straight to Visa, if he wrote the check, even, the truth is, even if he wrote the check straight to Visa, it wouldn't help. Because ultimately, Reuven is the one who's liable. So therefore, he's paying Reuven's interest. So in other words, what he's doing is benefiting Reuven because Reuven is the person who Visa is in a relationship with. So therefore, this would, if a person charges something on someone else's credit card, you have to pay the debt on time. If it goes over the time, this is an enormous problem. And same thing with a mortgage. This is a common situation where, you know, a parent or an in-law buys a house for, you know, the child doesn't have a good enough credit rating or whatever it is. So, but you know, the deal has to be structured. You have to speak to a Rav who's knowledgeable in these laws to find out how to do it, because to reimburse a person for interest that they had to pay means that they lent you the money and you're paying them interest. Right. So you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do that. That's ribbis. You're not allowed to do that. So there are ways to deal with it. There are ways to deal with it, but that's beyond the scope of the shir, and quite frankly, I'm not capable of telling you the ways that you deal with it. You have to go to a Rav who knows and sit down and figure it out. There are ways to do it. There are ways to do it, but very often people first wake up with the problem when it's too late. They, you know, they already signed on, they took out a mortgage. Very common thing that a parent with a house with a mortgage for the child, and the child is paying the parent the money, the parent is paying the bank, and the child is paying the parent. So this is a serious thing, because you're paying interest. The fact that he's your parent doesn't help. It doesn't help. You're not allowed to pay interest to a relative either. It makes no difference. There are ways to do it. But in a simple credit card purchase, you have to be very careful. If you purchase something on someone else's credit card, you have to pay them on time. You have to pay the debt within the 30 days, otherwise it causes a lot of grief. Basically, what would happen in such a situation is that the person whose card it was can't ask you for the interest. Which, you know, depending on how you want to view it, you know, maybe you'll say, okay, I got away with it. But, you know, the person will understandably be very upset, right? That, in other words, I lent you the money. You told me you'd pay it on time. Now you didn't. I can't charge you. I can't ask you to reimburse me. Okay, finally, the last topic of just the common everyday cases of ribbis is when you borrow food from a neighbor. Okay, so here we go. You go to the next door neighbor. I need a cup of sugar. I need a dozen eggs. Okay, so what's that? Is that a loan or is that a gift? So it depends. If you have a very good relationship with your neighbor, to the extent that nobody really keeps tabs, you know, you give me something, I give you something, and you know, over the long run, it all equals out, but nobody's really keeping judgment. So then there's no problem, because then it's just a gift. It's a gift. In other words, you borrow a cup of sugar, they're not going to take you to court, you know, where's my sugar? Right? It's not, it's a gift. It's a gift. So if you give them back later two cups of sugar or two cups of flour or whatever, what you gave them back was more value dollar-wise than what they gave you, that's not a problem. However, if it's a situation where it's not quite that way, or specifically where you say to the person, when you borrow it, I will give it back to you. I'll return it. I'll return it to you next time I go to the store. So now you have to be careful. Now you have to be careful. If you took 10 eggs and you want to give them back a dozen eggs, that's ribbis. You gave him back more than what you took from them. Right? Now, it sounds petty, but this is, you see, the Torah, this is one of the surim in the Torah that the Torah went, I don't know what the right word is, the Torah went to the extreme. To the extreme. The reason is, again, you'll say, this is crazy. You know, you tell this to a person in the world, they would tell you, you have to have your head examined. But the reason is because look what it leads to. Look what it could easily lead to. In other words, you say, in the simplest form, it's no big deal. It's painless. Right? The Torah calls a neshech. So if I get back one extra egg from my neighbor, that's neshech. That's a bite. What kind of bite is that? If I charge them 2% interest on a loan that they would have had to pay at least 10% interest in a bank, that would, they would have been lucky to get such a rate. And I'm charging them 2%. So I'm doing them the biggest favor. But the answer is, apparently, that in the view of the Torah, once you start up this road, there's no telling where it's going to end. And as we see in the secular world that way, it happens, it's very tempting, it's easily rationalized. From all the business dealings that a person has, this is the easiest thing to rationalize. Because as we said at the outset, I'm doing him a favor, he's happy, he's thrilled, he's dancing that he got the loan, so I did him the biggest favor, and I lost money, I could have invested it, who knows what I could have done. So the Torah was tuned into that reality, and therefore the Torah made the prohibition of ribbis. At the end, yeah, Dan, I'm sorry.
With all these things,
yeah,
that's, you know, saying thank you and all that sort of stuff is fine. You're dealing with another Jew who knows the laws of ribbis.
Yeah.
What happens? You borrow money from a non-from Jew who doesn't know any of this stuff. You pay him back. You don't say thank you.
Thank you, you could say. You certainly could. In the situation of Bichil Hashem, you could rely on the lenient opinions, no question. But other things not. In other words, other things you have to be careful. If he's not religious, you have to be careful in such a situation. So the point is now just, I'll end on this. There is a thing well known called the Heter Iska, that a contract that could be written up, because the reality is that people today, you know, and already for many, many, many hundreds and hundreds of years, it's a very big challenge to lend money. Like you say, it'll shut off commerce because nobody will lend the money to Jews because it's too restrictive. The laws are too restrictive. So they came up with a Heter Iska, which basically, the concept of a Heter Iska, you can't just come up with a contract that goes against the Torah. You can't, you know, write up a contract that I hereby authorize you to eat chametz on Pesach, signed by that. Right? In other words, the Heter Iska does not do that. But basically what a Heter Iska does is that it makes it that the money is not being loaned, it's being invested. It's a whole complicated thing. A person could read up on this, and that's what's commonly done. And all the banks, the Jewish banks, you know, the banks in Eretz Yisrael have Heter Iska, as far as I know. The major banks in Eretz Yisrael have all sat down with Rabbanim, and you know, because it was explained to them that, you know, in some cases they may be religious, and in other cases it was explained to them that you can't do this. So they have Heter Iskas in place. The person though should check. You have to sometimes, if it's a well-known bank, so then you could assume that they have it. But sometimes it's not such a well-known thing. You have to find out if the Heter Iska can be used. The person should very much try to consult with a Rav to make sure it's done properly. It's very doable. It's not hard to do, but you have to know what you're doing, and you have to deal with a person. Not many Rabbanim, this is a field of great expertise, and not that many people are so familiar with all the ins and outs. So therefore you have to sit down with someone who's knowledgeable and see if they could work it out. Very often it could be worked out. The purpose of this year was not to say you shouldn't lend money to Jews. The purpose of this year is just to sensitize that we should sensitize ourselves to what constitutes ribbis, how far the Torah goes with it, and therefore you should just realize that to lend a Jew money is a great mitzvah, and the Isurim of ribbis are there in place, and a person has to keep that in mind and view it with a certain hashkafa thank God I'm able to lend people money, and I'm not looking for anything in return. I'm very fortunate that Hashem gave me money that I'm even could extend to other people. It's a big schus that I have. I could help people, and with that outlook and with the knowledge of halacha, hopefully we could stay away from the violations in this very serious area.